Okay, folks, we are back. It is Sunday, September 22nd, 9:18 a.m. A rainy day where I am. How is it where you are? It's that time of the day we want to bring out our guest. Joining me now, Jordan Netburn, portfolio manager from Axiom Capital Management. Jordan, welcome back to the program. How are you today? I'm good, buddy, but we have a little audio problem. Hold on 1 second. How about now?
I'm great. How are you?
There you are. Sorry, buddy. A little problem in the booth there. What's happening on a Sunday morning?
Well, just digesting a week's events, volatility, expectations, just looking at the overall political climate, and I think we set up for obviously a little bit of an interesting purview for the fourth quarter.
Yeah. You know, buddy, what a week it was this week. I can't believe what was going on with the Fed. What the heck's the Fed thinking? Surprised the market this week with no move on QE. Good Lord.
Well, it's quite a reaction. I guess it's a case of making the bowl of porridge not too hot, not too sweet. They don't want anybody running for the exits, and I think they got everybody running the other way, at the very least, a big round of short covering, but certainly don't want to bash buying right after that announcement.
Yeah, I mean, come on. They were talking for months now about, you know, being focused on forward guidance. They kind of set us up for this taper to begin this week, and then, you know, they pulled the rug out. I was a little surprised.
Yeah, I guess they don't exactly know how to exit from a strategy which is not exitable. I think now that we've got the...
All you got to do is pull the plug on the printing press, Jordan. Just pull the plug on the press.
Yeah, you know, that's what has to be done, but I think maybe the feel is that if they do that, that there are definitely going to be some repercussions, but you and I have kind of both suspected all along, especially now that we have our friends in the UK and in Japan doing the same thing. It might be a prudent idea to do it before we start to get 10 other places starting to print money at record pace.
Right. I mean, the BOJ, I mean, they're out of control anyway, and they've gone way farther than the Fed. Really surprising, man. I just don't know what they're thinking. I guess the basic idea is they just don't want the bond vigilantes to discount their future moves too quickly. They want to try to control the rise in the long-term rates, right?
I think that's what they're trying to do, and I think to an extent that it can obviously be done, but isn't there anybody out there that's read the Emperor's New Clothes? Know what the next step looks like?
Now, here we go. Here's the other thought in this, Jordan. Tell me what you think about this. The idea being that the Fed is doing this non-taper this month because they expect Janet Yellen, the dove, to be nominated for the next Fed chair, and they want to let her be the one to start lifting the foot off the gas pedal. You buying into any of that?
Yeah, I think there could be some logic to that, and maybe they don't want to make her play the heavy. Maybe let Bernanke ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, I guess that's possible.
Yeah, it's definitely possible, and it kind of harkens back to when Greenspan was in the mount, and everybody thought he was this amazing genius, and then when you look back, you see that really he was the one that architected all these bubbles. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is Greenspan redo.
Well, if that's, you know, if you're going to use that argument, then clearly this is another bubble established by the Fed, because, you know, you're a portfolio manager. Come on, you saw the move in stocks on Wednesday. I feel dirty getting long stocks up here.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about that. I can't, there's nothing that I can say to argue with that. And to argue with the fact that, not that I would feel dirty, but the fact that when you try to substantiate the move we've seen, it's all predicated on this QE, all the paper money that's been introduced into the system, and you and I both know the textbook definition of inflation, too many dollars chasing too few goods. Boy, if there's not some inflation hanging out all over the place that's ready to finally show up here, which it has shown up in the form of tuition. It has shown up in the form of a little bit of gas prices, certainly food prices, but I think we've exported a lot of it, but it has to be just welling up.
Yeah. Well, let's touch base on what you love is gold. Gold was well offered all week. We're testing below 1,300, and then the Fed came in, saved the commodity markets, and or the commodity markets came in to remind the Fed that they need to stop QE because gold jumped $60 quickly on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. You know, we're going to see, I think, more of that on I don't know if it can risk trade where the perception is, oh, well, numbers are getting better, the economy's getting better, and, oh, maybe that's not the case, but commodity markets historically will tend to be very volatile, and this shouldn't be any exception, but, you know, my feelings at the end of the day, gold and silver, when I talk about not feeling dirty, gold and silver should be the most honest money that's out there, and they're actually currency.
Now, hold on. You know, I often let you off the hook on that. They are actually not currencies, my friend. Where are you using gold and silver as currencies?
Well, I think when the story is finally told, I think gold is already being seen as a currency, to
okay.
be quite frank.
No, but wait. Where is it being used as a currency?
It's not officially been declared legal tender, although there are several states that have applied for it to be so, but I do think that's the direction we're moving in. And what scares me is that you now have China and Russia really starting to eclipse any pace of buying by anybody else, and the fact that they are piling in. India actually raised.
That's all about jewelry, though, buddy. That's all about jewelry.
That's a hell of a lot of jewelry. That's
yeah, it is. They're freaks. They're freaks for the gold jewelry, and there's 2 billion of them.
Yeah. Well, that's going to save me a lot of people with a lot of plain effective case. I think that they see the writing on the wall also, and I think that what it points to is that at some point, the honest money out there is going to have to be backed by gold.
Buddy, now wait. Now, you're a historian. I know you are. I know how smart you are. So you know there have already been 3 attempts at a gold standard in the past 100 years, and they've all failed.
Well, it's working fairly well until Nixon removed it in this country.
Well, what about the one in the 1880s? That failed as well. It started between the French, the Swiss, and the Germans. That failed. Then we had another gold standard before World War One. That failed. The gold standard after World War Two failed.
You know what? Something's got to back it. And I think if you look back to when FDR removed it, that was the beginning of major trouble here. When Nixon removed it, that was the ignition of rampant inflation. You remember the interest rates were about 23%. Something's got to happen, and something's got to give somewhere. But the fact is, this massive accumulation of debt that's gone on, it's not being counted in any other way. So I think it's the right path.
All right, I'll push this a little further, and then we got to go to one other point I want to bring up before we have to split. What about the idea that a 100% gold standard would be contractionary for the global economy because there's not enough gold to support the current economic pace?
What economic pace is that?
You do the math. You know how much gold is in reserve on the planet.
Yeah, no,
it's not nearly enough to support the money supply currently in place on the planet. And so to have a 100% gold standard would automatically imply a contractionary monetary policy impacting growth dramatically around the world.
Well, 100% might not be the place that it has to start off, but, you know, something would be better than nothing. However, the economic growth that we see, it's anemic at best. I don't really believe a lot of the numbers that I see out there about global recovery, especially when it comes to the stats in this country.
Yeah, well, you know me. You know, I've been pumping that book, my new book, 5. There's structural problems here, man. If we don't solve them soon, we are going down.
Yeah, we've slid from being one of the best countries in the world to do business and to one of the most difficult, and you and I have talked about this before, all the regulation that's just been put in place that's kind of impeding business. I don't see it. I don't see the growth.
All right, let me segue real quick, pal. We got to split in a few minutes on that gold issue and related to your concerns about debt, which I share, of course. Let's talk about the president's comment this week, which I found very funny, but he said it in all seriousness. Raising the debt ceiling does not increase America's debt. Go.
It's diametrically opposed. It's 180 degrees to what he said in 2008. It's a tale of two Obamas. All of a sudden, it's not relevant. I don't get it. Whether or not it has to be done is an academic exercise, but it doesn't seem in any way, shape, or form from Fed policy and from the policy of the administration that taking on more debt is anything but helpful in his mind. And it's absurd. You know, it's going to be a humongous political football. You already see people from the conservative side, some of them even kowtowing to it. It'll end up being a big political fight. But how could it not?
You know, at some point, Jordan, we're going to have to stop it, right? I mean, if everyone's afraid of the political fight, at some point the fight's going to have to be had. I mean, what's it going to be, 25 trillion? Are we going to have the fight at 25 trillion? Are we going to have the fight at 20 trillion, 30 trillion? Eventually, we'll have to have the fight, right?
Yeah, I feel the fight is going to be triggered by some. There's going to be a tipping point.
Right. So why not have the fight? I mean, let's go have the fight. Shut the government down. Let's see. Let's have it. So what? Political fallouts. Let it be.
I was just going to say, you know, every time they talk about they're going to shut the government down for a few weeks, I start cheering.
Yeah.
Because at least we're saving some money.
And the fear is, the real fear for not doing it is that the people in Congress won't get reelected. That's their fear.
Well, you just hit the biggest point of all. There is a political clash out there today, and it's not just, I want to see the president do well. I want to see everybody do well. But the problem is, and the parties on both sides are guilty of this, this new class of politicians, they're really their own entity. They have the best health care. They have jobs which pay them very lucrative wage. And basically, they don't want to see anything interrupted. If you've ever watched the movies that we sort of grew up with in the 70s, the political backdrop, movies like Rollerball, Soylent Green, basically there was a group of leading politicians and everybody else, and nothing in between, and it kind of meshes with the way we've seen the middle class be slowly erased right now. And you're absolutely right. No one wants to fix the problem. They just want to get reelected.
We just passed another continuing resolution on Friday. So now this is 5 years of no budget, continuing resolutions, one after the other after the other, and it's just political BS.
It's just straight kicking the can down the road, and it just keeps happening. I was about to say, I cannot believe Lindsey Graham all of a sudden is this major war hawk.
Yeah, he wants to go after, he wants authority to attack Iran.
He wants, you know, all of a sudden we've gone from fighting wars when we need to being the world's police, and
right.
That's not good. I have at least some respect for a guy like Jim DeMint. He dropped out of the whole game entirely. Maybe he couldn't stand the hypocrisy anymore. maybe we need to see more people step out.
You know, quick story, hey buddy, quick story before we go. I met Jim DeMint in a bathroom about 3 months ago after he had left office, and he said he couldn't have been more happy.
I imagine he felt relieved.
You know what? That's a good place to leave it. We'll leave it on that excellent pun. As always, pal, great conversation. Look forward to talking to you next time. You enjoy your weekend.
Same here. Great talking to you, friend.
See you, pal.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Jordan Nepperin of Axiom Capital Management. Had a great conversation, as always. He is the man. Other side of the break, we're coming back with Financial Market Economics. It's that time of the show. Let's see how financial markets are doing. You're with Frankie Roach on The Frank Roach Show. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
There's a fire starting in my heart.